Hello.
I'm online.
Carson. He's the author of Arrest Proof Yourself. Now, this book was written in 2007, and I'm absolutely alarmed that I've never heard of it, because it should be in every household. It talks about how to keep yourself safe, how not to get in the system in the first place. Dale Carson is an attorney. We'll be talking to him in just a few minutes. But we all need to take a stand now. Even though this book was written in 2007, there are many things that are happening today that are unfair. And I'm going to play a little short clip after these few announcements. We are being sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, particularly today, nanovoice.org. And if you ever wanted to reveal the motivation and the truth behind the words, nanovoice is a free download, nanovoice.org. It has everything on it from Lady Gaga's motivations, and you'd be surprised, to the latest that we're going to put up today about Rand Paul. Does he believe his own words in support of Mitt Romney? We've evaluated Ron, and the mother, Ann. If you're interested in the truth and it's not what the media is saying, please look on our profile link after the show. The idea for Sound Health Options is that we want to provide, share really, information and ideas in support of freedom, integrity for an authentic and healthy life. We try to concentrate on self-health, self-responsibility, and supporting humanity, even if it's just one person at a time. We're welcoming callers today, and we'll try to get in as many questions as we can. If you want to join us on WebEx, and right now on WebEx, I am showing Dale Carson's book, but you can join us there. Go to our site, soundhealthoptions.com, and then go to the radio site, and you can watch, just join us on WebEx. We're going to be showing a couple of things that you might want to see, because they're absolutely appalling. I'll give you a couple of minutes to go do that. I'm supposed to tell you the date. I forgot that piece. July 17th. 2012, from the studios of Sound Health and the Institute of Biology. Got a couple of announcements I have to get in. I'm going to try to do them real quick because I want to get to Mr. Carson. It's spectacular. Last week, we did a show on pre-vaccination risk factors, and you also heard from Mike Adams with the Time Magazine article on how to die and how they're going to pay people if you'll let your parents die early. We have these classes archived. Remember, that was for the pre-vaccination risk factors. You also get the software with that. So just a reminder, go to our site, look on the front page. We did 5 different shows last week. One of them, a real eye-opener, with Barbara Lowe Fisher from the National Vaccine Convention, and she said something very profound, that the people who are financially benefiting are the ones making the rules for these vaccinations. And she talked about several countries that are outlawing them, and the people in the United States, or people who run the vaccination program in the United States, just won't let go of that financial benefiting. So not only with forced vaccinations, information that's going on that is against the Constitution. People are running absolutely scared. There's been hundreds of executive orders that take away your freedom and information, and so we have invited Dale Carson to come on. Arrest Proof Yourself is his book. Welcome to the show, Dale Carson.
Thank you for having me on this lovely Sunday afternoon.
Well, this book was written in 2007, and I don't think people realized how bad it was going to get. Did you have that in mind when you wrote this? Did you know what was coming?
Well, I've always had a penetrating fear of too much government, but the true motivation for writing the book really was to make the ordinary man aware of what really law enforcement, what function it serves in the communities. When we grow up, we're taught to trust law enforcement and to believe that they mean no harm, they're here to help us, all those sorts of things. What I realized when I became a police officer in Miami was that the mission was slightly different than that. And when you think about it from some distance, look at it from a mountaintop, you can see that law enforcement, really, one of the primary functions is they are a socializing agent. And you think about this in the abstract, you go, well, of course that's true. They prevent people from acting out and becoming disorderly intoxicated or just violating the laws and the freedoms and rights of other people. You know that that's what they're supposed to do. And in that narrow regard, I think they're necessary to keep people from stepping on one another's toes and those sorts of things. But I think it's gone beyond that. Men, and to a lesser degree, I think women are very competitive. I know men are. That's my gender, and I'm pretty familiar with it. We're competitive when it comes to playing sports, gambling, whatever the sport is, we're competitive against one another. When that competitive sort of nature becomes allied with law enforcement, something really unintended happens. And what happens is that men have to scale themselves against other men, and they do that by the sheer volume of the number of arrests that they make. And when you put yourself on the playing field, which we each of us do every day when we leave our houses, and sometimes when we're in our houses, but certainly when we leave our houses and we're driving, we put ourselves in the playing field. And law enforcement, despite what I was taught when I was young and many people have been taught, is really there in part to promote themselves internally within their own investigative and law enforcement agencies. And the way this is done is through this competition that I mentioned. And what they do is they score one another based on the number of arrests that they make. So every time there's a citizen law enforcement encounter, there's an opportunity for the officer to make a statistical accomplishment out of you. And so the book was really written to make people aware that they are a potential statistical accomplishment. I call that the electronic plantation for reasons I'll get into in a moment, but that statistical accomplishment comes by way of an arrest. And the way this all happens, and I delineate it fairly clearly in the book because it's really designed for people who are just very average. You really don't bring any intellectual skill necessarily to the match, and those are the people that are the fodder for law enforcement typically. Because the law enforcement officer has the right to stop you if you violate a traffic law. So you are driving your car, the red lights or blue lights come on in your rearview mirror, the siren whelps a couple times, you pull over, the officer approaches your car and he asks you a couple of quick questions. And those questions typically are, can I see your driver's license and your registration? And the officer looks at those, and he is doing, or she is doing an assessment about you right then, about whether or not you are susceptible to arrest. For example, if they walk up next to your window and they smell marijuana, that's probable cause for an arrest. You're going to jail. That's one of the reasons we point out in the book, or I point out in the book, don't smoke dope while you're riding around in your car. Don't carry dope in your car. So the officer is making assessments as they stand next to you in the car. And, of course, they're looking down. They're standing up. you're in the car, and you're lower than they are, so they can see into the interior of the car. And the lower courts have held that if the officer sees something that is clearly contraband, let's say 10 kilos of cocaine on the back floorboard of your car, they have every right to arrest you based on probable cause at that juncture. But the mechanism for making the arrest is much more sinister than one might imagine. And it's sinister in this regard. The officer will look at you and say to you these words, and these are his magic words, I use them frequently. You don't have any guns or narcotics in your car, do you? Well, every citizen knows that the answer to that question is just a profound no. Now, I have on rare occasions had people tell me yes, but that's rare, and those people are on the Darwin list to be removed from all social environment. But in any event, the answer is no, I don't. And then the follow-up question that the author asks, and this is where we train people in the book not to be susceptible to this, is, well, then you don't mind if I look, then, do you? The answer is an unqualified, yes, I do. But most people don't say that. To begin with, they're slightly intimidated. The lights are going on. We've been taught from a very young age that police officers are often right, and they do what's good for the society. So your knee-jerk, despite what it should be, is to permit them to search your car. The question that I often put to people in lecture series is if you were 16 years old and your mother walks into your room and says, son, I need you to come outside of your room. I'm going to search it thoroughly. Would you want your mother searching your room? The answer is an unqualified no. But we, when a stranger asks us this, a stranger in a uniform, we have this horrible, horrible tendency to say, sure, I don't mind if you search. I'm not carrying your guns and narcotics in my car. And many people will often respond with, I don't have anything to hide. Well, that's garbage. We all have things to hide from the government. We all have things to hide from other people. That's one of the reasons we don't live in glass houses, is because we don't want other people to see what we have. So once you have permitted the officer, agreed, consented to the search, you're just in deep trouble. Because, for example, as I point out in the book, if someone else has been riding in your car and they've left some marijuana, some cocaine, some pharmaceuticals that are not prescribed, oxycodone, oxycontin, something in the back of your car, and the officer finds it, you're going to jail straight away. And oddly enough, some of the pharmaceutical crimes have three-year minimum mandatories in Florida. So if you get arrested, you're in possession, you're going away for a minimum mandatory of 3 years. Same thing's true if you're a convicted felon. They find a bullet in your car, just the ammunition, an unfired cartridge in your car, 3 years minimum mandatory. So what I encourage people to do in the book is, first off, never lie to police. But you don't have to agree with them simply because they're standing at your door window in a car stop and ask permission to search your car. You do not have to agree to that. We're all protected by Fourth Amendment protections. The only reason they can search your car is if they have a warrant or probable cause. Now, there are certain warrant exceptions, which we're going into in a new updated book, which relate to the fact that law enforcement is not even permitted to go around to the side of your house within the curtilage of the area immediately or surrounding your house or the backyard. They can only come where the U.S. Postal Service comes. So there are restrictions in place, but if you're not aware of them, and in an effort to behave around law enforcement, you agree to with them and whatever their objectives are, you're putting yourself at extreme risk. And the book also explores what I call the electronic plantation. The electronic plantation is what is known as the National Criminal Information Computer. It used to be Center, because that was where all of the arrests were retained of any citizen in the United States arrested who was fingerprinted and processed through the FBI's fingerprint identification system. Originally, that was designed, and this is just another example of how government expands. Originally, that was just designed for use in investigative leads for only FBI agents. You had to be an FBI agent. You had to have a top secret clearance in order to have access to any of that information because it was about other citizens. And we all know, or at least I do at this juncture, that just because you're arrested doesn't mean you're guilty of anything. So it really was just a clearinghouse for investigative leads. Over the years, of course, we all now know but that's changed. Banks have access to NCIC information. Fire departments have access to NCIC information. So once you get in that system, though, remember, if you can go back to your civics class in high school, that the United States is a sovereign. The state of Florida, the state that you're in, is a sovereign. So, for example, in the state of Florida, they can enter you into the system, but they can't extract you from the system because one sovereign can't tell another sovereign what to do. So once you've been fingerprinted and you're in the NCIC system, many, many agencies have access to that information, right or wrong. One of the examples that I point out in the book is that, let's say you're in a dispute with your girlfriend and or your boyfriend, and they make an allegation against you that is just absolutely outrageous. They say you took a hot poker out of the oven and you chased them around the house with it and tried to attack them with it, okay, in the basement. Well, you and I know that that's garbage. But the police come, they believe your girlfriend or your paramour, and they arrest you, and they charge you with attempted murder. That attempted murder, once you're fingerprinted with that charge, is in the system permanently. And that's all the more reason to avoid any contact with law enforcement that you possibly can, and certainly to avoid disputes with paramours. And so the book's overall effort is to educate people about their rights. It's not a book about how to trick the police and get away with crime. It's a book that educates the population about what the dangers of law enforcement can be to you as an individual citizen. And it makes an effort to educate us about how to avoid them, what magic words to use if you're stopped when the officer asks, do you mind if I search your car? As a matter of fact, officer, I am heading to wherever you're driving somewhere. You've got to be headed someplace. I'm driving to my mother's house. I'm driving to work. I'm already late. If you would just let me have my citation, I'll sign it and let me go about my business. You don't have to agree with police, and they're not your friends, and you don't have to make them like you at a car stop. Now, what will happen often or occasionally is the officer says, well, I'm going to get the dog to come search your car. All right, officer, but I am late. I'd like to go. There are time limits on how long an officer can detain you for investigative purposes, about 30 minutes. The other thing they may say to you is, well, I'll get a warrant. And you go, thank God for a neutral magistrate. But you don't say that to the officer. You said, officer, I am late. I would like to go. But you're in charge here. If that's what you want to do, I'll wait until you've accomplished what you need to accomplish. But never say, you know, officer, I really want to get out of here. I don't have anything to hide. You can search my car. Because, again, you don't know what is in your car that could potentially affect you adversely and permanently if you get into the NCIC system, what I call the electronic plantation. Electronic plantation, because once you're arrested, not only can you never get out, but it has an adverse impact on your earning potential for the rest of your life.
Dale, I would like to play a short video that someone sent me that speaks to a lot of what you have just said. And this is a recent video. It's only 3 minutes long.
No problem.
It's a newscast. And this kid that they arrested is the son of a cop. And listen to the cops trying to say this was a duly executed warrant, and it was just a warrant signed on the spot.
Good evening, everyone. A college student has filed an $11 million lawsuit against police in central Utah.
He claims they forced a catheter in him when he refused to consent to a search for marijuana.
Fox 13's Ben Winslow is live in studio with us tonight with the exclusive story. Ben.
Stephen Cook has filed this lawsuit against the San Pete County Sheriff's Deputy and police in Ephraim. Now, he claims he was only smoking cigarettes with his friends, and the police were out of control when they searched them for drugs.
I don't think it's right what they did, and I'm pretty sure they ran into other people. You know, it made me feel like an animal.
Stephen Cook says he was smoking cigarettes with his friends back in 2008. dance with his friends back in 2008 when police approached their car. Police claimed to smell marijuana and searched the Snow College students. According to this lawsuit, Cook claims police brought in a canine and still couldn't find marijuana. An officer claimed to have found a glass pipe in the trunk, but then asked Cook, who was a passenger in the car, to drive his friend's car to the police station.
If somebody's under the influence of marijuana, the last thing you want to do is put them in a car and drive. That goes against every statute that the state has. And so that's where it gets a little frustrating, and then it just gets out of control from there.
At the police station, Cook claims he was put in a holding cell, and officers demanded he take a drug test.
And I asked for an attorney, you know, because I didn't know if this was right, what they were doing. And so once I did that, they said, well, we're getting a search warrant, so we're going to have your urine by the end of the night.
Police got a warrant and took him to the hospital, where Cook claims they forced a catheter into him to get the urine sample.
The nurse told him to hold my shoulders, so he held my shoulders, and then the nurse undid my pants and wiped me down with iodine and put the tube in. And then they took me to jail.
Cook says he was arrested for marijuana possession and resisting arrest for refusing to give that urine sample.
This is being used as a punishment to try and get them to comply. And rather than employing a simple blood test, they're forcibly catheterizing these people.
Absolutely, we deny the allegations.
The lawyer for the police and San Pete County points out that Cook struck a plea deal with prosecutors to the marijuana charge. It allows for the charge to be dismissed if he complies with probation.
Whatever happened to him in terms of the catheterization was done pursuant to a warrant, a bodily fluids warrant issued by a judge, so it was under the auspices of a court order.
I'd like them to be accountable for what they did.
Now, asked about the plea in abeyance, Cook, who is the son of two police officers, said he did challenge the police warrant. He lost in court. He says he is still fighting in court to have the overall charge dismissed. Bob and Hope?
So, Ben, have there been lawsuits similar to this one in the past?
Yes, there was a similar lawsuit that was filed back in 2008, about the same time that this incident occurred in neighboring Sevier County. And in that one, a woman alleged that she underwent a forced catheterization. Now, that lawsuit was ultimately dismissed in favor of the police. The judge in that case ruled that the woman could not prove police acted with malice and that their intent overall was to bring her to justice for the charges that she was facing at that time.
All right, so that may affect this lawsuit, or do we just have to wait and see what happens here?
Well, the lawyer for San Pete County certainly believes that that will have a bearing upon this case. It just remains to see how far it goes in court. Discovery, depositions are next. We may not see a trial until about 2014, if it goes to trial, if it isn't settled before then.
What do you think, Dale?
Well, I think this is just a prime example of the government just absolutely overstepping its bounds. Now, of course, I don't know all about the case. And one of the advantages of what they're talking about, the litigation, is probably a civil rights violation case, and it will be heard in the federal district court and not in the state courts. The advantage to that is the jury panels are different, and the federal judges take these cases very seriously. We recently had a case where an individual was kept in his hot car for 3 hours, Florida Sun, and we won a judgment against law enforcement in a neighboring county here in Jacksonville for that sort of misbehavior. But those things are long. They take, I mean, this particular case took 7 years to get to trial. And so the easier solution is to don't have dope in the car with you, and don't permit a search, as this individual apparently tried to avoid, but agreeing to drive to the police department or have a friend drive the police department. None of that is something you should do. Now, under recent Supreme Court decisions, Gant is the actual case, law enforcement is no longer permitted to simply stop you for a traffic arrest and then, incident to that arrest, search your car. They can no longer do that. And that will have an impact, ultimately, on sort of eradicating this behavior, at least to a degree. It's interesting, if you read that particular decision, the courts in their analysis say that you can't do that. However, because for so long police officers have been trained this way, that they can't be held personally liable. I don't believe that's a fair ruling by the Supreme Court, but then who am I to say?
One of your chapters in the book is Dirty Cop Tricks. Can you tell our listeners about some of them are pretty crappy.
I think when you understand, Sherry, that the effort of law enforcement, just think about this now. If you really buy into my concept that police officers there to arrest you, to make a statistical accomplishment. Look, when they go into the locker rooms in the afternoon and we're putting our stuff away, what do you think the conversation's about? It's about what happened during the course of the day, like in any other business. So if I made 4 arrests and you made 6 arrests that day, who's the better cop? I mean, there's no question, right? You are. You made 6 arrests. That's wow, okay? So if you buy off on the concept that police officers are there to arrest you, because here's the motivation, and anyone who can look at a TV today, which I got what killed my TV in 1986, but if you look at shows that are on today, the detective shows predominate. Every cop on the street in a police car wants to be a detective because you get all the women, you get the neat clothes, you get to carry a concealed weapon. Nobody ever knows where you are or what you're doing, okay? That's just the way it is. So they're highly motivated, they're competitive, and they're trying to get that gold detective star, okay? So if you buy off on that, if you believe that, then police officers will do what it takes to put you in jail. And one of the simplest is to invade your personal space. I have done this. I know many officers have done this. You simply get right nose to nose with a guy. And when you do, typically the fellow's going to push you. I mean, it's just a normal human reaction, right? The problem is when you push a cop, it's a serious violation. If it is resisting with violence, right, or assault on a police officer, it's a felony. So you don't want that to happen. And the best thing you can do is sit there quietly and use a funny thing that a gal by the name of Bet Allen taught me about. And Bet Allen was quite a woman. Her husband, Bill Allen, was an editor for the Atlanta Constitution. He's still alive. Was manners are always in vogue. If you just use manners, and so many of our youngsters today don't know what that means, really. But it's yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, manners. And never, never lose your patience with a police officer. Never. Because if you do and you act out, I can assure you that if that officer can't put you in jail, all of the people who are coming to his aid will be able to put you in jail. We have but to look at people like Rodney King, to whom this happened. So I encourage you throughout the book, always manners with law enforcement. Treat them like your elderly aunt who you love dearly. And it's just always very respectful, always very kind, always very considerate, and never lose your temper with law enforcement.
There's a very, looks funny, except now that you explain this as a cop shouting in your face, of a guy holding on to his pants with his eyes closed, and if this is step by step, if they get in your face, this is what you ought to do.
Sure.
Page 143. We're looking at the index of your book.
Right.
So can they force you to open your eyes?
Oh, well, sure. I think that was done for a bit of hyperbole. But the point is, you don't want to move your hands in any way, or you don't want to stare at the police officer malevolently. You want to use your manners. Now, I know that can be very hard to do, particularly in a stressful time. But I assure you, your victory on the street is not showing this police officer who's in charge. Because I will tell you in advance, that officer, she's in charge, not you. And you may be able to show off to your buddies, see, I told that officer off, and I'm cool. Uh-uh. The key here is avoiding getting in the back of the police car and going to the jail and having your fingerprints entered into the AFID system, the automatic fingerprint identification system for the FBI. If that does not happen to you, you have won. You are the victor, okay? If you bounce up against the police officer, if your hand flails against the police officer, you're going to jail. So whatever it takes to not have that happen, that is what you want to do.
Why are police allowed to get in your face like this?
Who's to stop them? Remember that most of these encounters happen one-on-one, right? And to be candid, when I was working Liberty and Carroll City, which are the core areas of Miami, who's going to stop you? Who's going to say to you, and in the book I talk about this, I had a sergeant who was a real jerk. And he said, you know, let me tell you, I don't care who you are. If you don't start putting people in jail, I'm going to have your job. And it was real straightforward. There was no mystery about it. He didn't say, if you don't start treating people more nicely, I'm going to have your job. He didn't say, you know, if you don't start dressing sharp more sharply, I'm going to have your job. He said, if you don't start putting people in jail, I'm going to have your job. And, of course, I was young at the time. I would have been 23, I suppose. And so I certainly didn't want to lose my job. I had a young wife, you know, and I thought we weren't making that much money, God knows. So I couldn't afford to lose my job, and I learned right then and there what to do. I had to put people in jail, and I decided I'd do it. If I was going to do it, I'd be the best there was. And I often led the district for arrests. Now, when I'm 40 years old and I'm in the FBI, I'm thinking, why did I arrest all those jerks? I mean, were they really bent on the destruction of Western civilization? I kind of doubt that. You know, they were just poor yokels making a living, trying to do whatever they could, but yet they fell into my net, and they were part of my statistical accomplishment, clearly.
We have two questions from our audience. One of them is, you suggest in your book, must be somebody who read your book, that you close your eyes and mouth to minimize spit ingestion. So these cops are spitting on people?
Well, I mean, have you ever, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but have you ever been in a real dispute with somebody and they're yelling at you? Certainly they're going to be spitting all over you as well. And so are they actually intentionally spitting on you? No. But does their spittle fly out of their mouths when they're shouting at you? Without question, it does.
Okay, another.
Because remember they're angry. And one of the things that makes an angry person sometimes even angrier is when you don't respond in the typical manner, right? And I'm trying to help you avoid responding in the typical manner, which is to back off or to strike out, lash out.
So this is deliberate. Is this something about the kind of person who becomes a cop, or is this from the top down that says you got to do this?
You know, that's really rather interesting. And there are a great number of psychological profile tests that are used to kind of weed out people that have an ego and want to force everybody to do what they want to do, control freaks, I would call them. And I think, to a degree, they're weeded out, but the actual position causes people to behave that way. Again, the motivation isn't necessarily control of other people and making them do what you want to do. But remember, you got a thick law book. It has all these weird laws in it that you're empowered to enforce. And your motivation to become a detective is to put as many people in jail as you can. So it's like going through a menu at a Chinese restaurant, right? You can select whatever you want, and that person is going to go to jail. In other words, what I want to encourage people to understand is when police officers confront them in a citizen police encounter, is that the police officers calculating whether or not the police officer can put that person in jail. That's what it's all about. When you think about it, what are the reasons would law enforcement have to stop and ask you questions or to tell you something? What's the point of that? In a perfect world, we wouldn't have law enforcement telling us anything. We'd all be well-behaved and suitably attired and in a position where we're not offending other people. But of course, that doesn't happen, and law enforcement does encounter us, mostly in critical circumstances such as that, and when the law enforcement citizen encounter occurs, there's a good possibility somebody's going to jail. Let me give you an example. In the state of Florida, as in many states, about 15 years ago, there was an actual program set up in Texas where half of the counties were divided in half, and one half of the county, when the police officers went to a domestic dispute where people were fighting, they gave them brochures, told them to stop behaving like imbeciles, and let them go. And the other side, they put one of the parties in jail, always. If they went, one of the parties went to jail. There was a 50% reduction in homicides in the side where somebody went to jail. Now, that's significant, a 50% reduction in homicides. They abandoned the actual study that was being conducted at the university, and they implemented within years the law that said that police officers are hold harmless and somebody, and it's in part of all the general orders now for most law enforcement departments, and it's certainly statutorily the law, that police officers are hold harmless. They can't be arrested and charged civilly, and they are encouraged to arrest somebody at one of these disputes. Well, these disputes happen all the time. And if you know in advance that one of the members of this dispute that we're having right now at my house is going to jail, you'd be disinclined to have that dispute. But that puts it right on the front burner. I mean, if you can understand that if law enforcement responds to your house because your child has called the police and said they're fighting here, my dad struck me, my mother struck me, or any of those sorts of things, if you understood somebody's going to jail, the first and most intelligent thing you should do is leave, right, if somebody's going to go to jail. Because the primary thing here is I don't want people going to jail who should not be going to jail. Now, certainly there are people who should go to jail. Society's better off without them. But the machine shouldn't operate to just chew up everybody first and then at some point down the line determine who it was who should have been arrested. And I think citizens also fail to perceive what a money-making operation jailing and policing and lawyering is. I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar nationally operation. You've got bail bondsmen. You've got, here's an example, in the Duval County Jail, in 1 year, inmates who are in custody have to pay to make phone calls. It's about $2.50 a phone call, lasts for 15 minutes. Last year, they made $2.5 million on the phone calls.
Wow.
That's crazy. But the money that's involved, we spoke earlier about, I heard your blog talking about how, you know, you got to figure where the money is, who's making the money, and why people are disinclined to the vaccination problem. One of the reasons I'm a vegan, is because people don't consider the money. And once you plug the money into the circumstance, you go, well, it's no wonder they arrest so many people. People are making money like crazy off of it.
We have so many questions coming up in our chat. One I think is important because it comes in your book. Are the police allowed to touch you in your private parts or pinch or hit you, and how should you respond?
You know, that's a really interesting question. And the TSA people are doing this now. I have a lawyer friend who told him he didn't want to be searched, and they groped him, and before they groped him, there was a police officer standing there. It was TSA who was doing the groping. And he said, I don't want my genitals touched. And, of course, in any other circumstance, unless it's in a doctor's office with consent, anybody who touches your genitalia is a sex offender, right? I mean, there's no question about that. But we, for some reason, have surrendered our rights to permit TSA and law enforcement on some occasions to grope us. Now, I will tell you that there's an exception. One of the exceptions is if you're going to jail and I'm searching you on the street and I touch your genitalia, it's a pass, okay? And I'm doing that, and we all understand this, provided that I'm not a deviant of some kind. I'm doing this to assure myself that you don't have any weapons or evidence, meaning narcotics, secreted around your genitalia. But other than that, other than those narrow circumstances, no one should ever, the most sacred thing we have is our the sanctity of our body. No one should be permitted to do anything to affect our bodies. And I make that even broader. That's why GMO is bad. That's why all of these products, that the genetically modified wheat that we eat that has no resemblance whatever to the true wheat, all of those things are invasions into our bodies that we unknowingly oftentimes consent to. But certainly the most sacred thing we have is our home, our bodies first, and our homes second, and maybe our cars a distant third.
How is it happening that they're going to homes that aren't even involved, the people don't even live there, they're shooting up, they killed a 12-year-old, wrong house? How are they getting away with it, or are people being held accountable?
Well, I can tell you, you know, it's fascinating. The excuse is this, and we heard it earlier during this circumstance with the judge issuing a warrant, and they found a glass pipe in the trunk of a car. And again, I'm just repeating what I generally know about it. I don't know the specifics. But any time a neutral magistrate weighs in on something, there's a presumption, two things. A, that the law enforcement officer in affidavit for the arrest warrant has told the truth, which is not always the case. In fact, it would be fair for me to say that rarely is it the case that the affidavit for the search warrant, to permit the search warrant, is entirely truthful. And there's an unholy alliance, of course, between law enforcement, the white-haired wearers, and the judiciary. Most judges, you know, they're in court all the time, the police are around all the time, and there's not a judge that I know of who's not a big proponent of being law-abiding, right? So there's a natural nexus between law enforcement and the judiciary. So the concept that the judges are neutral insofar as law enforcement is concerned is not always the case. Federal judges are different, but state judges, particularly elected judges who campaign on supporting law enforcement and being big proponents of the law, those are the very people you don't want in a judicial position. You don't want somebody who favors law enforcement. On the alternative, you don't want someone who favors just the citizens. You want someone who's truly neutral. And I say, particularly in the rural South, that rarely exists anymore. There are obvious exceptions, and I am close friends with judges who would never just intentionally sign a warrant for law enforcement because they said it was true without making the necessary inquiries. But the way the system is set up, the judges don't have to make any inquiries. They take the affidavit from law enforcement at face value. What happens is nobody ever pursues it to the point where they show that the police officer lied on the affidavit for the search warrant, and then there's some repercussions to that. That's what doesn't happen. And it's fascinating. You know, people get arrested. The first thing they think of, and I used to have this with my young guys who would get arrested. They're 18 years old. The first thing they're thinking about is, I want to get out of jail. And because they can't make bond money, they say, well, I'll just take time served. Well, you have to take a guilty plea and time served. And I often refused in my early law days. I don't ever do it now, but in my early law days, I could see that that wasn't helpful or healthy. So I just refused to do it, and I told them quite clearly, look, I can get you out of this in terms of because they behaved improperly, but I will not permit you to plea guilty. Because what the effect of pleading guilty is, it validates the conduct of law enforcement. And the conduct of law enforcement, when it's validated and it's wrong, makes things more difficult for all of us as citizens. You know, the police officers and police ladies are no different from all the rest of us. They make mistakes every day. They behave badly for the wrong reasons. They're just human. And so you can't trust them to always make the right decision. And there's a lot of pressure to put people in jail who don't look like us, who are different from us. The homeless, the people who smell bad, the jitterbugs who ride around in their cars with their music playing loud. There's just an effort to try to make them like the rest of us. And I think one of the beauties of existence is we're all of us different. In my conference room in my law office, every chair in there is a different chair. They're elegant chairs, but they're different. And the reason is because we're each of us different. And I'm glad it's that way, frankly. I'm not trying to make everybody like me, and I don't want law enforcement to try to make everybody like them.
We have lots of questions still, but I want to ask you about your practice. One of the questions is, do you have a listing or referral system of attorneys like you? Now, we are looking at Dale Carson Law right now. So
I make an effort. I just handle a case in California for some folks. One of the systems that not products, at least at this juncture, but one of the things that I do for people who call me, if you've got a legitimate question and you need some guidance on who to find to help you with it, or if you need to understand what's in store for you, we typically will do a short conversation with you for nothing, just to help you out. If you want some of our time, we charge sort of a standard rate, but I'm more than willing to put some time into helping you get around your circumstance and to educate you about what to expect, not only from law enforcement, but from other lawyers. Because I will tell you that I don't trust other lawyers either. I'm just institutionalized lawyering is one of the worst things that ever happened to us. Because remember, lawyers are making money too on the number of cases that they can turn over. So if I can get a $7,500 for a plea deal and not have to do deposition work, not have to do any real work at all, I might be inclined to just take the $7,500 and throw you to the wolves. But that's not my practice. My practice is to protect every citizen from being overrun either by other citizens or by law enforcement, because I can see the goal, and the goal is to avoid being part of that permanent system of record keeping that the government, the federal government, and the state government has. Because you don't want people to know those kinds of things about you, or worse, to think things that about you that are not true. I had a young fellow who was charged what we call a Romeo and Juliet crime. He was 16, she was 14, they had sex. In the state of Florida, that's illegal. He was charged, and he pled guilty, and he was a sex offender, okay? Now, all things being equal, I don't think of that as a sex offense. But the law sees it differently. He had been picked up not only as a sexual offender, but as a sexual predator. A sexual predator is somebody who focuses on children under 12 years of age and has a fondness for just them. And his life, until I got it resolved, was that he was singled out in his neighborhood. Law enforcement would go by and tell all of his neighbors that he was a sexual predator, so people would come up into his yard and hate him, throw things at him. If he called me originally because he could not have his lights on during Halloween. Because to have his lights on would mean that he was going to get candy, he'd be subject to being around young kids, et cetera. Well, he wasn't even a predator. But the system, once you're in the system, you're just in deep trouble, even if you're not a sex offender. Because employers, that's one of the first places they look when they see that you're a convicted felon or you've been arrested even, they just go on to the next applicant.
More questions. If you, I don't even know how to ask this one. It's very long. They're talking about accelerated problems from the police. They yell at you, they spit on you, they make lewd comments, and then they start hitting you. And I know you address this in your book, too. How do you respond to that?
Well, here's the difficulty that you get into. And it's one of the reasons that one of my lawyers, who was a state attorney for 23 years and ultimately a division chief here in Jacksonville, he says that nothing happens good after 9 o'clock in the evening. And he's right. if you're out past 9 o'clock, you're looking for trouble. If you find yourself in an isolated circumstance at night with law enforcement and they are toughening you up by hitting you or doing things, your only ability to do is just to protect yourself. You get into a fetal ball, lay on the ground, and let them have with you. Because if you fight them, they're simply going to escalate, and they're going to call their buddies and say, and they will say, they will push a button on their microphone, or they will make a call signal, which will tell every other police officer who's coming to the scene that they, the police officer, being attacked by you. So when the police officers get there, they're not going to stand your side and say, now, did you hit Officer Smith here? They're not going to do that. They're going to attack you. So the best thing to do, again, is never find yourself, and I know this can be difficult, in a circumstance where you're alone in the middle of the night and you're being accosted by law enforcement. Now, if this, in fact, happens, and there's a photograph of it or a film of it, as now with these small cameras on our iPhones, then you have a 1983 or a civil rights violation case against the law enforcement officer, provided you didn't provoke it. Oftentimes, the officer will say, and remember, everybody in law enforcement, meaning the judiciary, everybody oftentimes in the press, believe what the police officers say. And if they believe them, that necessarily means they're not going to believe my client, who says, wait a minute, I wasn't doing anything. The officer came up, he took out his nightstick, and he hit me 4 times with it. I didn't do anything. People are simply not going to believe it. They're going to go, in their gut, they're going to say, you know, he must have been doing something. Otherwise, you know, the officer's not crazy. Well, they may not be, but sometimes they just go over the top. They may have believed you're someone you're not. We often have individuals who are arrested who are not the people law enforcement are looking for. So if you protest your innocence and say, wait, you're not looking for me, the officer slug you and worry about it later. So the best advice I can give to you if someone is hitting you is to not use excessive force in defending yourself, but to get into a defensive posture so that you can't be severely injured. Cover your kidneys, your face, your vital area in the front, and just wait for to abate. Now, if you think it's going to elevate, then look, everybody has a right to protect yourself. And if I were attacked by a police officer, I'd do what it took to defend myself and worry about a jury later.
How can people get in touch with you, and are you available for workshops and classes?
I am available both for workshops and classes. And I'm on the webpage, the law office, which is DaleCarsonLaw.com. And I'm one of the few lawyers that have a problem. I do have an answering service. They will get to me if it's an emergency. I don't mind talking to somebody. I'm a servant. I will tell you that. I am a servant. And I want to help people who are having difficulties with law enforcement or arrest circumstances. It's what I do for a living. And I have 3 lawyers who have the same philosophy that I have. Otherwise, they might be working for me. And we really do reach out and try to help people.
We want to talk about your new book and when that's coming out, but there's 2 questions that are here. 3. Can the police take your fingerprints without arresting you?
You know, they can. And it's gotten much more egregious than that. You know, now law enforcement can pretty much take your DNA, which I resist. Every individual where the court has or the state attorney has asked to take a DNA sample of one of my clients, I have resisted that with all of my ability legally. Now, the courts just necessarily rule in favor of the state. But I am one who believes that the government has no business having our DNA. I mean, that's just outrageous as far as I'm concerned. If we think of invasion of somebody putting a catheter in your penis versus taking your DNA, I'd rather have the catheter than I had to have my DNA taken, because we don't know what is happening behind closed doors with that DNA. And that is who we truly are. If they answer your question here, they can take your fingerprints if you permit them to. But if you say, I'm not going to permit you to take my fingerprints, The officer's option is real simple. Fine, you're under arrest. Then they're going to get your life, your fingerprints. So if the key here is to not be arrested and your fingerprints are going to be taken in exchange for not arresting you, then I would say give them your fingerprints. But I don't want them having anything that's identifiable with us, nothing. And the government, you doesn't have the right to have that stuff.
We've got at least 10 people here who want to know if you have any online classes, how they could get more information.
You know, we had considered doing online classes. We just have been very busy here in the last year or so. But it's something we considered, and I'll certainly take that request at face value, and maybe we will try to put some classes on. The better thing is to get to youngsters and even adults, but more youngsters. I think youngsters are the individuals who are more at risk, and they're less informed about what their rights are. What I do in the workshops is we actually have circumstances where we role play. And I think that's the best way to understand what to do. We're trying to come up with an aspect of the book that is digital and that really provides a workbook. It's digital and answers questions and answers, Q&A sorts of things, and then role play with the parent or other people so you can get a feel for what. It's interesting, when I was in one of my law school classes, one of my professors asked me to search one of the students, and then one of the volunteers came up, and they were just stunned how I behaved. It all becomes very natural to me when I'm behaving like I was trained as a police officer in Miami, where during the time that I was there were 8 police officers who were killed in the line of duty. So it was very dangerous, and we had to take extra precautions for ourselves in Miami. My point is that role play is the best way to make individuals feel comfortable in dealing with law enforcement, to know what your rights are. But the biggest thing is to not provide an obvious target to law enforcement. If you're riding down the road with your windows open, the stereo's playing loud, and rolls of smoke coming out from your spliff that you're smoking, you're a target. And I think the simplest thing, advice that I can give people today, is one of the things that you really want to do, people like people who are like them. So we all like people who are like us, generally. And we don't like people who are not like us. So the big key here is, and this will be a leap for some of us, is that the more you're like a police officer and who he is, not while he's on duty, but while he's off duty, the less likely you are to be a target of law enforcement. If he drives a pickup truck, you drive a pickup truck. If he dresses with a button-down collar, you dress with a button-down collar. It's that segment of society that you want to emulate. Now, are you surrendering your own personal freedoms to how you dress and behave? Yeah, you are. So the only solution to that is not to become a target, is to stay off the playing field. And the way to stay off the playing field is not to drive, not to be in public. Well, none of us can do that. But some of the things you can do, the simple things to do, not play your music loud, don't smoke dope while you're driving your car, running around. Don't dress like a heathen. And I guess the last thing is don't be out after 9 o'clock. Most of the felony arrests that I made, good felony arrests, were made after 9 o'clock. My favorite shift of all the shifts was 3 to 11. Because 3 in the afternoon you started, you really got going about 6 o'clock. After about 6 o'clock, the sun's starting to go down, things are starting to pop. And so you're working till 11 o'clock at night. Most of your arrests happen between 9 and 11. So if you can afford to just not be wandering around between 9 and midnight, and frankly, listen, be home with a good book. Take care of your kids. Do things around the house with your wife or husband. Those are better productive things for us. Fix a vegan meal for the family. All the kinds of things that we can do for ourselves and centered around a household can be done from, 7 o'clock in the evening until we go to bed at night to get up to go to work in the morning, because we're productive citizens. And law enforcement targets people who are not, in their mind, productive citizens.
One of the things you said in your book was to join the DARE, to join Little League where the policeman's kids are and become their friend, and they're less likely to be a problem. I thought that
That's true. But that's true always, right? If I know somebody in law enforcement, let's just say I know the sergeant who works this area, and I get harassed by a new cop on the beat, right? I do. And so the first thing I say, wait a minute, what about Sergeant Thompson? He's a buddy of mine. He can tell you that I don't do anything wrong and I'm a bad guy. What kind of effect does that have on law enforcement? It gives them a moment to think this through. Do I want to target one of my sergeant's friends? Answer, no. No. And when this kid was arrested and charged with marijuana, and then both of his parents are law enforcement, you got to question that. I mean, is this a kid who's just angry at his parents, so he's acting out against law enforcement? I mean, I don't know the answer to these questions, and I don't mean to suggest otherwise, but typically in the law enforcement family, you go out of your way not to harass law enforcement. Members of the law enforcement community, their families, you just don't do that. So to the extent that you're born into a family of law enforcement, typically you're not going to get your ass in trouble. So I don't know what happened here. The formula didn't work here, apparently. This is the exception that makes the rule.
We have so many other questions and comments, but I want you to talk about when your new book is coming out. One of the comments, there seems to be a shift in how police act now versus when you were a young man. In the 60s or 70s, local sheriff seemed to be more reasonable in nature.
No question about that. That is 100% true. I mean, police officers used to take you home if you were drunk. I mean, we knew the police officers, but here's one of the problems. There's a population density that is here now that was not present in 1960. Law enforcement, I think, was just different. It was held in high regard. We respected law enforcement, and law enforcement understood that respect and for the most part deserved it. My dad was a sheriff for 28 years. He was a former FBI agent. But more to the point, he was a World War II veteran who fought in the war in France against the Germans. And I just tell you that entire generation had a different view. I mean, that was one guy, my father, that you wouldn't want to pick a fight with over some nonsense law or regulation you thought you ought to enforce. And everybody knew that. These men and women who fought in World War II were prepared to die for what they believed in. I think that no longer is the case. I think that none of us are prepared to die for what we believe in, that it's all situational ethics. I think that's bad. But I also believe that there's a population density. Now, if you get in trouble, you can't go west, young man. In my inner city youth, who I represent often, there's no place for them to go. You can't get out of the city. Now, you and I know they could get in a car and drive for 60 minutes and be in the wilderness, but they don't have any concept of the wilderness. They lived in a city all their lives. So this dynamic of a high density of people is really exacerbating the problem with law enforcement today.
We have lots of other questions, but we've run out of time. When's your new book coming out?
Well, we're working on it right now. It's a revised edition. I'm also working on a book involving for mothers about how to identify pedophiles to protect their children. So just some tips and some ideas who these actual predators are, how they encounter our children, and what mothers can do to protect themselves and their children, and what fathers can do to protect themselves, what to look for, what are the signs, what do we worry about, how do we keep our children. And recently in the news in Texas somewhere, there was an individual found someone sexually attacking his daughter or his granddaughter and beat the guy and killed him. Well, I don't want that to happen. What I want to happen is for people to be aware of what are the signals of pedophilia. And we are also, as I said, working on making a workbook and a media interactive, what we call an e-book, that has film connected with it and that sort of thing, not a traditional textbook or a book like Arrest Proof Yourself is now.
If you want to get in touch with Dale Carson, it's Dale, C-A-R-S-O-N-D-A-L-E, Dale Law, DaleCarsonLaw.com. There's a little consultation request there. There's phone numbers. We certainly encourage you to get in touch with him, have him in talking to your school and your groups of young people. You can get his book, Arrest Proof, yourself. An ex-cop reveals how easy it is for anyone to get arrested, how even a single arrest can ruin your life, and what to do if the police get in your face. 4.5 stars, 56 reviews. It's only $10. Order it today, and you can have it by Wednesday, Amazon.com. The archive of this show will be available within the next half hour. This is, to me, an absolutely must-hear, must-buy book. This should have been in my area of knowledge years ago, and I would have given out copies to everybody I know. This is incredibly important. And if you love the show, please put it out there that there are archives. And Dale, if we can help you any way get this information to the public, a teleseminar, anything else, if we can help you, please let us know, and I will be in touch right after the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Any last words? I already know. Stay home after
All right, and manners. Always use manners. You can never be faulted for that. We can be faulted for many things, but never using manners.
Thank you for being here. We will certainly have you on any time you feel like you have a message, or even if you just want to talk to people, let us know. And the show.
Thank you so much for your show and your effort on our behalf. Thank you.
We'll talk later.